And they've been playing the same language segments for almost as long as they've been on the air.
We will now begin our lesson with transportation. Gagardenas. Gagardenas. There are four parts to this lesson.
It's a great way to hear and to practice the language when you're in your car, for example. And I remember when I was driving with my sister to Windsor from Six Nations and we had the language program on. We got to learn the Mohawk word for car, which is gazerek. Gazerek. We learned that word together. And the further we drove away from Six Nations, the weaker the radio signal got, and we started joking about how we were losing our language until the signal faded out completely. But we'll hear from language speakers who are dedicating themselves to not losing the language signal at all. My first guest is a very strong Indigenous language advocate, language educator, and cultural leader in Six Nations. Amos Key Jr. is Mohawk, but he is a Cayuga language speaker, and we'll find out why that is in his interview. Amos holds down many roles in our community, including being recently elected to band council. When I first approached Amos about doing this interview, a big smile came over him. I took that smile to mean the passion and joy he felt that our languages were getting some much-needed attention and that more people will soon learn how important our languages are to our overall well-being as Haudenosaunee people.
Hello, Skana. My name is Amos Key. Dehai ho wan snik gwas kya so, and that's my traditional name. It translates as, in Cayuga, that I work with words. So that's the translation of Dehai ho wan. And that was given to me at birth, so I had no control over it. It just so happened my career ended up being an advocate in languages for Six Nations, at Six Nations here at Grand River. I'm a Mohawk, Gayant Kyono, and I'm from the Turtle Clan. So I'm from my mother. I inherited all of that ancestry from them, from my mother's side of the family, from Six Nations. We are a matrilineal system, so all of our inheritance, our ancestry, comes from our mother's bloodline. And that's probably because of the concepts that we have in our Genesis story about who we are as Ongwehome Haudenosaunee people.
Does the Cayuga name come from your mother's side then?
Yes, my mother's side, it came from her father. They helped organize that name, and he brought it to her. And so it's from her family that it got the name, Dehai ho wan.
And you're a Mohawk speaker?
No, I speak Cayuga. Mm. I'll have to tell you the story because my mother and father, my mother is a Mohawk speaker fluently, she was, and my father was Onondaga. But they knew each other's languages, and they also knew Seneca and all those languages that lived around them. So Seneca, Mohawk, Cayuga, and Onondaga. So I find it interesting. I never did sit down with them and ask them, because I was so young, I guess it didn't bother me, of why they raised us in a Cayuga language when it wasn't either of their languages. But because they were so fluent, quadrilingual plus English, it didn't matter to them, I guess. I don't think there was a conscious effort. The only thing I could maybe understand is the fact that Cayuga became the language of our spirituality here at Grand River. It's even in the numbers in the Longhouse, which is our the center of who we are for our spirituality. It's the actual physical buildings. The Longhouse people, Gunosiskeho, so that's the only reason I can think that they might have, for some reason, decided, or by providence or serendipitous, you know, said, we better raise them in the Cayuga language. So all of my brothers and sisters were raised in the Cayuga language. I understand more Onondaga and Seneca than I do Mohawk. But her family were all Mohawk speakers. I can remember them all speaking Mohawk when they got together as a family, her siblings, because there was like eight of them. And that Mohawk family all raised the language of their spouses. And so then at Six Nations, the language of spirituality became predominantly Cayuga. And that's the language that I grew up in, so that was really helpful, yeah, for me. So, yeah.
So your whole family is Longhouse people, and is that you went to Cayuga Longhouse?
Yes. At Six Nations, we have several Longhouses. I think there's four or five. There's a new Mohawk Longhouse, which is great. But predominantly, there were two Cayuga language I guess all longhouses were Cayuga language. As I said, it became the language predominantly in the longhouse in their spirituality. So there's the Onondaga longhouse, even though it's Onondaga. It became a Cayuga-speaking longhouse as well. There's the Seneca longhouse, which you think would be Seneca, but it is Cayuga predominantly used in that longhouse as well. And there's two other Cayuga longhouses, upper and then lower Cayuga, with this Cayuga language anyway there. So I find that really interesting, that history, that rich history of our longhouses, they became all predominantly Cayuga-speaking, mm-hmm. right, with the language and the spirituality and the ceremony and music. Mm-hmm. So for me, it when I look at my own history, I had six nations here. It was because there was a couple of solitudes here, I call it. There was a Christian and longhouse solitude, and then the political Confederacy chiefs and the elected council. So those were the segments of our society here. So I found through my history, my learning here of Grand River, that the Mohawk-speaking community became Anglicans predominantly, and a lot of them, the language became not used anymore. So it became predominantly English for them. So, of course, because of the spirituality of the Anglican faith, right? And in the longhouse people, they kept their languages. So that's what happened here. And but in the last two decades, I would say, with the introduction of Ungwana Genjokwa with Brian Miracle's immersion program, they have moved to create their own new longhouse, which will mirror all of the traditions anyway of all the longhouses. And now they're doing it. They're conducting it in their own language of Mohawk, which is beautiful. And that's what you want for them. You want them to have their own spirituality, and so they can look at their own moral compass.
Mm. Miss, congratulations. You were elected to council.
Oh, yes, thank
you. Yeah, you're welcome. And that was, like, really recently. Tell me what your role and responsibilities are in council.
Well, with the new elected council, right now we are going through 2 months of onboarding or training, which I find really helpful, because I was in council before in the 80s, but we never had that kind of onboarding. But now, because I think there's so many directions we're going in and responsibilities, I'm grateful that they're actually having this training session for us before we take on more leadership positions. But we're going to be involved with everything from health to infrastructure to political stance externally, internally as well. And then we have committees that look after all of those. So then we'll probably be asked, each one of us, to chair one of those committees on behalf of the council. But I'm really, as you know, I'm a staunch supporter of our indigenous civilization here, and also our languages. So I'm sure I'm going to get those portfolios. And I'm ready to start, because I'm really concerned that we still haven't funded the physical plant, a school for Gawaneo, the immersion school, even though it's been here for 35 years, it still doesn't have a healthy space for it to offer its kindergarten grade 12 program. We are grateful to Stires, Glenn Stires, for offering us his arena, but it's still not a school. So, I mean, we're grateful for all of his offering to allow us to have the Gawaneo immersion school there. We're very positive and grateful here at Six Nations, because we've gone to the point of establishing a language commission here that's going to oversee the development of language, long-range and short-term planning. But now we can now look at placing language, have a future, a sort of a blueprint of where we want, I guess, the next generation to be. Like, I think for me, and that's been always been my sort of in the back of my one of the metrics would be to have them, or all of us, our next generation, to become bilingual, you know, of whatever language, English and Mohawk, English, Cayuga, Onondaga, and English, vice versa. Mm-hmm. It's a good tool to have a language commission, because then you have all the people who are interested or offering language to come and sit at the table, and we can draft up a blueprint of where we want this community to go in the next 50 years.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're in a great position of influence to make that happen. Yes, so I have a feeling that's going to happen. Yeah.
Yes. And my role at the radio station has always been to have language on the radio. So we're slowly moving there. I know we got some interest now from all of these community groups to maybe have a radio program about language or to in their language. And they can even be DJing in their language. You know, you don't have to have language lessons all the time. It can just be sort of the contemporary radio program with language as the mode of transmission. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's being done.
Yes.
We hear that coming out of Ganawage.
Yes.
They have that K100 3-point station or whatever it is. But they've got a noon hour all language programming.
Yeah.
You kind of answered this question already, but I wanted to hear more about people who are language speakers where they have come through, it's intergenerational within the family.
Right.
And, I'm hearing from new language speakers that there is an old language, old school, if you will, language. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, because as someone who has been brought up in language with your family, what are the differences or similarities between old school language and what you hear the new language speakers speaking?
Sometimes when I hear them, I think it's the cadence of the language. And I'm guilty of it, too. I tend to speak it faster than my parents would have. Mm. They took their time speaking the language, so that was like, you can't misunderstand them, right? But I find also in my thinking, and maybe it's because I'm still translating as well from English to Cayuga, because that's what I'm always asked to do, right? But I just love hearing the young people now speaking in their circles totally in the language. And I don't know whether that's a criticism. I don't think it is. It's just that the language has switched, and the language has become, the cadence of it has sped up, right? That's the only real significant difference I see or hear, because I'm an advocate for language. I just love it when I hear them all speaking in a room, these young people, and they're bilingual, right? And I'm even as an adult, because I had no contemporaries to speak my language with. So there's about a 20-year space of these young people now who are bilingual. So that's what happened to us here at Six Nations. So all of our young people who are speaking a language are probably in their 30s. There's a big gap between speakers or bilingual speakers of the language. So it's either you're in your 70s or in your below age 30 or less, right, that are speaking a language. Those who are senior, they get together as well, and they help the younger people learn how to speak their language, or they're asked questions about certain, philosophies, even word origin, etymology, they call it. Some of the word phrases, like where did they originate from and stuff. And that's the next thing I want to work with is the etymology of our words, because a lot of it has a sacred morpheme in it that's related to our genesis or the creator. And I think we need to do some research in that. And that'll really bring the language alive, because then you'll know the origins of some of our more sacred phrases, I guess, of words.
I absolutely love that. You know, having an understanding of the real origins of these words and broken apart and connecting to the words in that way is just amazing. It's really indigenizing the methodology within the teaching of the language.
Yeah.
And, because anybody can learn and recite, I suppose.
Yeah, by rote, yeah.
Yeah, but then that really helps to root the language in one's heart, you will.
Yeah.
What are the benefits say, for example, Mark Miller, MP Miller, white guy, who really is kind of proficient in the Mohawk language because he applied himself.
Yeah.
And what are the benefits of non-native people picking up the language, do you think?
Well, you could stand back and say they should have done it in the first place, right? And I think it'll give them an idea of who we are as Indigenous people, because there's all this incidental learning that goes on. So you learn the grammar of the language normally in a language program, but I see a lot of our teachers, because they have this other knowledge, base, that they come to the classroom and they can share the ideology, the psychology, the philosophy of who our what our civilizations are about, and their virtues and ethics. So they can share all of that in an adult classroom or an immersion system, you know, so they'll understand basically all that incidental learning that comes in a language program. And I think that's true for all language programs. It's just that now we're taking the stage. We're going to present now from our point of view and from our perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a little embarrassing for me as a non-speaker to when a non-native person can just kind of like, you know, kind of riff off in the language. I'm like, But, you know, I have nothing but excuses. I mean, even as a person who has, like, minimal language, when I do recognize words in conversation, when I hear the language spoken in conversation, and I'm able to pick out those words I know, it just makes you sit up.
Yes.
You know, and also, Amos, you are now the executive director at CKRZ, where we're recording our interview. Yes. I wanted to, if you could tell us about the role that you see radio playing in terms of perpetuating language, in particular CKRZ. What does CKRZ do?
Throughout the day, we have language lessons, at least word lists from our different languages, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, Bemowin, Cayuga, Onondaga, and Mohawk. So we have that playing throughout the day. But now we're having actual students come in and now producing their own language program. So we started with Cayuga. We're hoping the Mohawk and then the Onondaga will come on, and then the Anishinaabe will come on and do their own show. But I think there's a connectedness between all of the Haudenosaunee communities, because as you mentioned, Gahnamwage, Agwasasne has a fantastic radio program in the language. And now Tainanega just got licensed. I got the license this week. They were certified to have a radio station there now. So they're going to start all over with their Mohawk language. And then now Manitoulin Island is also going to start with their radio station. So they'll have, it'll be all in Anishinaabe, Bemowin, Ojibwe. So that's going to be fantastic. So I guess our next step would be to have an association of Indigenous radio so that we can talk shop. And give our best practices, share our best practices with each other, and raise the profile of our radio stations. Because we're a not-for-profit radio station here, I call it NGO, not non-government organization, we have that kind of connection to the community that they can come and use the radio station for their efforts, right? So I want to make sure that that continues to go on, and as a radio station here at CKRZ, that opportunity for our languages to flourish live on air, because we always keep saying it's a live language. Yeah. It's something that we should be speaking. It's an oral language, I guess is what they say. Mm-hmm. So if it's, I think we have the vehicle for being an oral language right here at CKRZ. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's something that can get syndicated out into other communities. And, you know, it really kind of debunks the idea that any of the urban radio stations who have, like, you know, proper, you know, commercial radio licenses, who say, oh, the big excuse for them not to include language, although they're actually supposed to have language, is the funding. Right. They can't find the funding to produce those language programs.
Right.
Whereas, you know, like you said, this is the people's radio station. Yeah, it's the voice of the grant.
That's right.
So it's really literally bringing that home and making that available. Yeah. So that those programs then become like really invaluable to the radio community at large.
Right.
And I hope we see that.
Yeah, and we didn't, as adults, we didn't have that vehicle to help us with our language, but now this next generation, they have that vehicle for them to promote their language and to hear themselves speak, you know, because we rebroadcast a lot of the shows so that they can hear it over and over and over. And I think it's a great opportunity, I think, for all of our radio stations in the Southwest, or Southern Ontario, I should say, to really promote and help promote the language and to make it alive again, oral tradition, as we used to say. But we have a lot of that, and we want to be able to do that with our young people now that going forward. Mind you, we didn't have that available to us because, you know, our languages were, as a human right, we were stripped of that with the Indian Act. I mean, right until the 80s when we started Gawaneo, the parents had to become civilly disobedient in order to have a school where the language was the mode of instruction. So I know that history, And I would advise any other community that if they want to demonstrate their need for the language, then become civilly disobedient. Mm-hmm. There's a place for being civilly disobedient. And we proved it here. The parents just said, we're not sending our children back to school until we get immersion. And that's what happened here at Grand River.
One last thing I wanted to talk to you about. Yeah. You know, Amos, you're so active and busy in community, and you also sing with the Singing Society, Old Mush Singers. And I just wanted to hear from you the role you see the Singing Societies play in perpetuating the language as well.
For our Old Mush Singers, I try to make sure that I compose songs in our languages so that these young people and these senior people who are in our group may not have had the opportunity to sing in their language. So I try to create music in our languages so that they can learn them, right? And I guess because when you take a deeper dive into our civilization, it is full of music for every occasion, from birth, when you get your name, your language, I mean, your name is raised with music to the creator at that time in ceremony, right to when we take our last breaths. There's music for wakes. There's music for our deaths. So we have all those occasions. And when we celebrate, we can, and in all of our ceremony throughout the year, all is full of music. And that's, it's just like any civilization in the world has music for every occasion, just like Western European languages all have music in their language. We do too. So that's why I'm so grateful. And when I'm at the university and acting as a professor, I try to debunk the term culture because it's so limiting. Mm. So I just say we have a civilization, and one of the traits of that is that we have music, just like any other civilization in the world. And we don't just have stories about our origin, we have a genesis. We have a genesis, and we've got to start believing in that. And that's because when anthropologists talked about us, they used to say it's their legend or their story. And it's so demeaning to me. It's not that. It is a genesis of who we are, because as Ongwehome people, we are from the sky world. And we consider ourselves star people because we came from the heavens, right? So then you can say you're divine because then you know you came from a creator or maker who is Sungwayadison to us. So we have the divinity built in our civilization right away. We're probably closer to science with the Big Bang Theory. We call it Genesis. Scientists call it the Big Bang Theory. We all come from the sky world, I just think that's so beautiful, and I think that's just now getting out there, and I'm glad some of our younger artists are beginning to promote that as well, whether it's in their visual arts or their music, that we are from the sky world and that we have a tradition, we have a genesis. It's not just a story.
How do you say star people in the language?
Oh, I would say Ongwehome. I would just say Ongwehome. Because we're the real people, right? Sure. The real people, yeah.
That was Amos Key Jr., Six Nations' own Renaissance man. I really loved how Amos talked about how music, as well as language, is such an integral part of what we do, how we live, who we are as Haudenosaunee people. Music is prayer. Music is medicine. That's why we have seen and continue to see great musical excellence come from Six Nations. As long as we keep singing, we will continue to thrive as ourselves. I'm January Rogers, your host. Coming up on future episodes of Words and Culture, I'm going to be speaking with language learners who created a radio show right here on Six Nations of the Grand River to share and teach their language. It's like a little language nest on the radio for all to benefit from. But now I have a song for you. Old Mush Singers are part of a national singing society who are benevolent in nature. Their first job is to help people in community who need help. That used to be things like cutting wood for older people or delivering foods to those who are housebound. They are a well-structured and disciplined society with rules, traditions, leadership, and responsibilities. Singing is actually their third job. They appear at social dance gatherings and sing at different events in community and even at festivals. With these appearances, the old mush singers are able to share not only our traditional songs, but the real meaning behind the songs. I had the privilege of attending one of their practices as they were getting ready for a big sing hosted on Six Nations in the spring of 2023. Five. That's my cat's name because I found him on Fifth Line here on Six Nations. And Oguare, meaning bear. My cat Whisk is a little Oguare, a little bear. Nyawa, that means thank you. So Nyawa for joining me on Words and Culture. Until next time, be well, take care.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi, Gigawabamin, Soko Seni Deni E, Ninen Yuji Shina,
Ekose,
Kakuwutau. We'll see you again.
Thanks to Words and Culture for that presentation. We'll be bringing you those periodically as part of our programming. There's more on the Haudenosaunee language, and then they're starting a new series focusing on Cree. Hopefully they'll be coming and doing some languages from our region here as well. Lots of great programming coming up here on CJSF today. In about a minute and a half, Democracy Now!, it will get underway with Amy Goodman. Up at 12 noon is Katie and Raccoon City, some great pop music and a love of music there. Lots more other programming coming up, including tonight. You're going to get a reprise edition of Bitcoover. Connor, the host of Bitcoover, is traveling in Norway at the present time, all the way up to far northern Norway. But his show still airs tonight, and I hope you're going to be tuning in for that as well as other programming here today.
Greetings, netizens.
Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.